It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we finish up our series of conversations with congressional candidates by talking with Iowa State Representative Abby Finkenauer of Dubuque. She is the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 1st District, trying to unseat the second-term Republican incumbent, Rod Blum, Congressman Rod Blum. The 1st District is northeast Iowa, including the cities of Dubuque, Waterloo, way down to Cedar Rapids, though, as well. Representative Finkenauer, welcome to our studio.
Well, thank you, Ben. I really appreciate being invited. Thank you so much.
Let's talk about the State House. You've represented Iowa in the State House since January of 2015. What do you consider your major achievements in your time in the Iowa State House?
Well, I was in the minority for the first, well, obviously for all 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, the thing I am most proud of is standing up for working families every chance I have gotten. You know, the first couple of years they came under attack often, but we had a Democratic Senate that was able to stop the really bad stuff. And then my last 2 years, you know, a lot of that bad stuff I fought against my first 2 years started to become law. And so I took those voices from the folks in Dubuque, took them down to the State House and made sure they were heard. On top of that, you know, besides just standing up for working families, you know, trying to work across the aisle on some issues that Democrats and Republicans can come together, you know, things like human trafficking, the opioid epidemic, there's more things to do, but at least, you know, we're starting to be able to move the needle. On top of that, I was also a ranking member of government oversight, where you know, I helped lead the charge in the House along with the Senate, where we started looking into some of the deaths that were happening, actually, where you had children go through foster care that then ended up in special needs adoptions and then ended up homeschooled. And there were, you know, there were actually a couple of young women that, you know, died. And so we started digging into all of that and what was going on. I called for the resignation of the DHS director, which we got. We started to move forward there. There's still obviously more work to do there as well. But there are issues, obviously, that, you know, Democrats and Republicans should be able to get together on. I was happy to be a part of some of those conversations. But again, when it comes down to it, and I look back on those last 4 years, it is definitely always having the backs of working families, especially when it came to the gutting of collective bargaining and making sure that folks had a voice.
Mm-hmm. Abby Finkenauer with us. If you'd like to join our conversation, Abby Finkenauer will be with us for about 20 minutes. You can pose your questions live, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Representative Finkenauer, polls show the U.S. House may very well flip to the Democratic to Democratic control. Of course, those are polls. We know from 2016, it's not a done deal until after Election Day. What would be your highest priorities should you be elected to Congress and should you find yourself in the House, the U.S. House, in the majority?
Yeah, so there's a couple things, one of which would be tackling health care. Right now, I mean, it does not matter if you are a Democrat, Republican, or where you live in this country, you know, health care is not working for folks. Premiums are too high. The what we saw from the Republicans in the U.S. House and also on the state level shows that we cannot trust them with health care. You know, the U.S. House right now, we saw votes after votes to, you know, be able to charge folks higher premiums for pre-existing condition. On the state level, we saw the privatization of Medicaid where folks can't get the care that they need. And so, again, what I want to do is get there and actually take this issue seriously, which to me would be adding a public option to the ACA where folks can buy into Medicare up to the age of 65. Essentially, that would be, you know, inviting competition into that marketplace for insurance companies, driving down those premiums so you can keep your private insurer, but those premiums will be lower. And at the same time, allowing Medicare to negotiate directly with drug companies, lowering drug prices. I mean, it is, again, something that I just hear over and over again, no matter where I am in the state. And again, it does not matter what party affiliation you are. It's something we have got to tackle and have to come together on and stop playing politics.
Mm-hmm.
Also, on top of it, you know, something that I hear a lot out in the district is making sure that we have access to trade schools and apprenticeship programs. I mean, this is something where, you know, my dad was a union pipe fitter. It gave us a very good life because he was able to have a good job that had good wages and good benefits. And right now we need to be making sure we're investing in that training, even starting in high school. One of the things I saw actually that I really appreciated was the Waterloo Career Center for the school district. And I got a tour of that recently. And this is something where you're going to have kids graduating high school with certifications, at least starting on their way to it, that, you know, we should be able to see in school districts all across this district. And it's something that we should be investing in. And I want to make sure we actually have a voice for that on the federal level.
Mm-hmm. Abby Finkenauer, answer the charge, going back to your health care mention there, the charge by your opponent, Rod Blum, that in his words, you will join Nancy Pelosi and put government in charge of our health care, just quoting here, that your plan would double income taxes and cost us trillions and end Medicare as we know it.
Well, I think this is a scare tactic from Congressman Blum, as a lot of things that he says are. What I support, and again, I've been really clear about this, is adding that public option to the ACA where folks can buy into Medicare up to the age of 65 and then add that competition in where those healthcare premiums will drop. We've got to, again, get serious about this. And this is something where Congressman Blum doesn't have a plan. So it's easy for him to just make up things or show, you know, throw accusations here or there when he's voted over 10 times to, you know, essentially gut protections for pre-existing conditions and allow insurance companies to charge older Americans more. And at the same time, you know, voted for a tax bill that adds $1.9 trillion to our deficit, where 83% of that's going to the top 1% in corporations, and where even just last week, or I suppose maybe a couple weeks ago now, you heard Senator McConnell talking about that and saying that they're going to have to look at changing Social Security and Medicare to pay for it. I mean, that is unreal to me. We've got to protect these programs. These are things that are not entitlements. They are earned benefits, and they are sacred promises we have to each other. And we better have folks in D.C. willing to step up and protect them.
Mm-hmm. How do you take care of the deficit, if not by the entitlement programs? Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, as you said, they're saying the entitlement programs must be looked at, like Social Security. How do you get that huge deficit, ballooning deficit, hitting $779 billion in the 2018 fiscal year? That's the highest level since 2012. How do you get that under control with the plans that you have?
Yeah. So again, I want to be very clear here that I do not view Social Security or Medicare as entitlements. Again, these are earned benefits that folks have worked for, and we better, again, make sure that they are solvent for years to come. One way we do that is making sure that you can tax incomes over $1 million for Social Security, making sure, again, that those are solvent. We should also be looking at closing some of those corporate loopholes. I know that's, you know, talked about a lot right now, and that's even something that President Trump talked about, but we haven't seen done. One of those is that carried interest loophole, where right now you've got hedge fund managers being able to tax their income like capital gains, essentially paying less than you know, average Americans. And that, again, is just wrong. That what we have seen from D.C., any tax plans we've seen come out of there have helped out the big corporations in 1%. That is not, I mean, they were pretty transparent about it as well, because anything that would have helped working families, they had it set to expire. The things, you know, the tax cuts for corporations were permanent. And again, that says everything you need to know with who they are looking out for right now. It's not supposed to, it's, you know, this isn't who we are. We are better than this. And it's quite literally our livelihoods here in Iowa on the line here in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about trade, the tariffs. The president, a much different trade policy, more aggressive trade policy, imposing on foreign lands, particularly China. Tariffs causing Iowa farmers anxiety, yet I've heard from farmers on this program willing to support the president and hopes that in the short-term pain, as the president puts it, will end in a long-term gain. You've said these tariffs are deeply troubling. What would you do differently to correct what are seen, recognized, I think you would agree, as unfair trade practices?
Yeah, you know, there is no question that China is a bad actor and needs to be dealt with. However, I got to tell you, starting a trade war on Twitter isn't how you do it. I mean, my sister and brother-in-law are corn and soybean farmers. They're working their tails off every single day and, you know, hope to pass that farm on to the next generation and are worried every single morning about their future because of this trade war started on Twitter. And they are not alone. There are folks all across the Midwest, specifically here in Iowa, who are feeling the same thing. This idea that we keep hearing, you know, Congressman Blum spout and others spout saying, you know, oh, be patient, it'll be worth it. It's insulting to the folks that I'm talking to because right now they already see Brazil and China making new soybean contracts. And by the way, these are contracts that have been built over decades. So there has been so much long-term damage already done. I mean, our state is projected to lose $2.2 billion in our agriculture industry alone because of this. The other thing we've got to keep in mind here, especially with Iowa, and this is why we're getting hit on all sides, you know, we've got John Deere here. We make combines, and folks are worried about, you know, their livelihoods in all corners of our state and how this is going to continue to affect us. We need to have somebody with a backbone that's willing to stand up and stand up to the administration when they are, you know, using practices that are hurting us. And right now, I've been concerned about the way that this has been handled. There was no strategic plan. Anything that I would do moving forward would bring, you know, our corn growers or soybean farmers or our pork producers to the table and have these discussions and make sure that they are heard. And that's something, again, we didn't see, you know, happening. And anything we do with trade, again, needs to make sure that Iowa is at the forefront here and has a voice. What we've seen from this administration is using our working families, using our farmers here in Iowa as poker chips that, you know, Trump essentially was willing to bet and being okay with losing if this doesn't go well. And here we are, you know, weeks after I remember Congressman Blum saying, oh, this will all be sorted out by then. It hasn't happened. Folks are still concerned. And, you know, this is something that we're going to be dealing with for years to come now. And again, we better be sending someone that at least is going to have Iowa's back.
Mm-hmm. State Representative Abby Finkenauer with us, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 1st District, challenging Ron Blum. Let me continue with trade. And yet, what about this new U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement? It's called USMCA, a result of Donald Trump's more aggressive trade policies. You said it's like playing poker. This agreement, granted, yet to be approved, includes a modernization of the existing North American Free Trade Agreement, as well as some innovations sought by U.S. Rules of origin for autos and other goods. Don't you applaud this agreement and the apparent success of the president with a more aggressive approach to our trading partners, getting the U.S. a better deal?
You know, I'm all for the U.S. getting a better deal, and I do still have some concerns. Our pork producers are still concerned about the tariffs from Mexico. And also, you know, I know our labor partners are also, you know, still concerned as well, just given it sounds as though there's more protections for our workers, but there's not a lot of teeth in it. So maybe these are things that can be dealt with afterwards as well. Again, you know, our biggest trading partner, especially when it comes to agriculture, is China. And what we have seen happen here, this idea that, you know, I heard Congressman Blum keep talking about, oh, he's going to break China. We haven't seen that happen. There is no strategy. There is no plan. And I am continuing to be concerned about what we're seeing here.
Your opponent, Rod Blum, Congressman Blum, has been very critical of the news media. Tell us, what kind of relationship would you and do you have with the media? What kind of relationship would you foster if elected to Congress?
Well, I'm very happy to be joining you right now, which, you know, this morning, actually, I was just in Waterloo, you know, did an interview with KBBG and headed to Manchester to do radio as well later. And, you know, I sat down with every single editorial board that wanted to chat. And, you know, I know Congressman Blum cannot say the same there. It's something that it's been important to me my whole career here. You know, it's part of public service. Your job is to show up and listen to your constituents, even ones who do not agree with you, because, again, you still represent them and you're supposed to have those conversations. And you also need to be talking to the media because it's part of our democracy here. It's a pillar of our democracy that folks know what's going on. And again, it's OK if people don't agree with you on every single thing. But there is, it's part of your job. You know, this is why you do this, is to make sure that folks know who you are, what you stand for. And again, it's something that we just haven't seen from our current leadership in D.C., and it's something that I would really like to change here. And, you know, it's important also not just in our bigger cities to chat with media, but also some of our smaller towns as well. I know, you know, it's just, again, it's really incredibly important, especially in this district where we've got 20 counties, just making sure you're getting out there, having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Representative, State Representative Abby Finkenauer, coming to the end of our talk. We've got 7 or 8 minutes left. Representative Finkenauer, you are 29, is that right?
I am. I'll be 30 at the end of December.
All right. 30, should you be sworn in. If elected, would you be the youngest member of Congress?
You know, I don't think so. I don't know. There's another woman that is running, and she's from New York, and I think she's about 9 months younger than I am. I know that the U.S. has never elected a woman in her 20s before. So that would be, you know, that would be a first. And, you know, it's important to have some new perspective as well, and also just perspective for folks that actually understand working families.
Mm-hmm. But medium age of voters in your district, the first district, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, is 39. Mm-hmm. The largest age group of voters in the first district is the 45 to 54-year-old age group. So with your relative youth, how will you work to understand and serve the voters in your district, seeing that the voters, at least in average, are what, a decade older than you are?
Yeah, the exact same way I did in that state house. You know, one of my favorite things that I did every single month we were in session, we had a forum. And so we would go and hear from folks and listen to their stories. And that's incredibly important, and hear their concerns. And again, your job, whether it be a state representative or whether it be a congresswoman, is to take the voices and the concerns of your constituents to the places where they absolutely deserve and need to be heard. And that's something, again, that I was proud that I was able to do and would continue to do. You know, yesterday I was actually visiting the Veterans Freedom Center in Dubuque, and it's something where we didn't have media with us or anything like that. I just went and we talked about playing pool, and I saw the pens that they make that were, you know, some part of the therapy. And it's just having real conversations with folks. And again, it's my friends and family here. I mean, Iowa's where I grew up. It's where I decide to stay and serve my community. It is my home. It is also where I would love to, you know, raise a family one day myself. And it is so much a part of who I am. And it's just so important for me that these are the folks that, again, just haven't been heard in D.C. And my job is to listen and then take those voices where they belong.
You grew up in Iowa, but according to data tracked by the Federal Election Commission, you've raised more than twice as much money to fund your campaign from donors in California than you have then in donors in Iowa. There's also been large amounts of money raised from donors in New York and Massachusetts. Of course, in the first district, you would be serving Iowans, not Californians, or those from New York. Who is donating to your campaign from the West Coast, the East Coast?
Well,
what do you say to Iowans who say, you know, that this is an out-of-state corporate interests drowning out the voices of the rest of us? I mean, those are words of your own ad, right?
Oh, my goodness. So I got to tell you, you know, I actually have more individual donors within the state of Iowa than Congressman Blum has. But he wouldn't tell you that. And this is just one of the things that he uses to distract. The fact is, you know, I have put together a grassroots campaign that I am very, very proud of. You know, a couple months into this race, I was out there and, you know, it's 20 counties. So it's a very big district. And I stopped to fill up for gas about 10 o'clock at night. And I was standing there at the pump, seeing the numbers go up and up, and thinking to myself in that moment, how in the world am I going to be able to do this and actually, you know, run this campaign? And in my head in that moment, I thought, oh, okay, well, this is why folks like Congressman Blum, who can write themselves $500,000 checks to their campaign, run for Congress. And this is why folks who are still paying off their student loans don't. And it would have been very, very easy.
And you still have a student loan.
I do, yep, over about 20 grand. And it would have been easy to walk away at that moment. And then I started thinking about it, and I said, well, this is exactly why we need change in Washington. And so, yeah, I am proud of the campaign we put together, where, again, our average donation is $20. We have more individual donors within the state of Iowa than Congressman Blum. And the only folks that I will be representing in Washington, D.C. are the folks here in my district, the exact same way, again, that I did in that state house. It's incredibly important for me. And you know, one of the things I did too in the state house was take my dad's sweatshirt with me down, and it actually stayed at my desk for all 4 years. And the sweatshirt had holes from the sparks of his welding torch. And I kept it with me at that desk to remind me every day who I was fighting for. And that sweatshirt I'd really like to take with me to Washington, D.C. and make sure it's in that congressional office so everybody sees and remembers who we need to be fighting for. And, you know, quite frankly, the Iowans at Washington, D.C. is quite frankly forgotten.
Representative Finkenauer, before we let you get away, I'd like to ask you to address the wave of attempted pipe bombings last week, devices sent to several prominent Democrats, opponents of Donald Trump, who've been the rhetorical targets of the president. Also, last weekend, the horrible massacre at the Philadelphia synagogue. What, if any, connection do you see between those threats, that violence, and the hostile political environment in this country? Do you place responsibility anywhere? Do you see a connection?
I tell you, you know, the hate and the fear that is being, you know, spewed right now in our country and, you know, by folks like, you know, Congressman Steve King, it has no place in our politics. It has no place in our country. And we are better than this. We are desperate for some common sense and decency in public service again and in our politics. You know, that's why I got into this in the first place. And to see what we, you know, have been seeing, it is not who we are. We are better than this. And this is quite literally that common sense, that decency that is on the line and on the ballot in 2018 in just 4 days here. And it's again, it's so incredibly important that we bring that back, that civility back to our government again. It's, you know, it has been very sad to see, and it's about time we have some change.
Mm-hmm. A quick word, if I can give you 30 seconds, perhaps this is not quite fair, 30 to 40 seconds on a sense of your approach to foreign policy, since we haven't even touched that.
Yeah, so, you know, we absolutely need to be funding our State Department. That was one of the things I was really concerned about after this administration took office. They had the hiring freeze, and it's something that we have to be funding our State Department, making sure that, you know, that's good for our foreign policy. It's good for our national security, and that's something I would like to see as well. And, you know, again, it was one of my biggest concerns that I saw this administration take as soon as they took office.
Okay, thank you very much for coming into our Cedar Falls studio. Iowa State Representative Abby Finkenauer of Dubuque, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 1st District in Northeast Iowa, including the cities of Waterloo and Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids down in the south of that district, Dubuque, where Abby Finkenauer is from. Abby Finkenauer, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the how-tos of political polling and one survey in particular, the University of Iowa's Hawkeye poll. It shows Fred Hubble leading Kim Reynolds in the race for governor. My guest, the political science professor and one of his poli-sci students, the Hawkeye poll. When we return, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.